Welcome, everyone, to Lean Software Fundamentals. My name's Stephen Borg.
I'm Andrew Clear.
And we're going to be talking about principles and techniques for helping you deliver better software faster with these lean concepts and lean principles. It kind of builds a little bit on what we talked about earlier in the Kanban session 2 weeks ago, which should be coming online now fairly soon. Let's dive right into the slides. What do you say, Andrew?
Sounds great.
First thing is introductions. My name's Stephen Borg. You can tweet me here at Stephen Borg. I'm the co-founder and strategist at Northwest Cadence. Just a little fairness, I do have a bias towards math and proofs. I understand the importance of culture. It's a critical thing that you have good culture. But I've got this bias to math and proofs, which is why I love this session. We get to not do a whole lot of math, but we do get to talk about things that go beyond the touchy-feely in Kanban and process improvement.
Did you just call it the touchy-feely?
I did. I called it the touchy-feely. So we're going to go beyond the soft stuff and talk some of the principles of why things actually work. I've been a Microsoft ALM MVP since 2005. I don't know what that means other for the context here, other than I've been in the industry. Teamwork is really critical to me, and focusing on that delivery of actual value. And I've got to say, I have been really enjoying delivering these ALM Wednesdays, and I have been looking forward to this one with Andrew for an awful long time. So be prepared to enjoy yourselves. It's going to be a great session. Andrew, over to you.
Hello. So I'm Andrew Clear. I'm an ALM consultant with Northwest Cadence, over with Steve. My personal bias is definitely towards principles-based management and definitely a bias towards management has a very important role to play even with agile software delivery. I think the emphasis on how management can lead a team towards software and through a software agility lifecycle has really been de-emphasized in the last couple of years. And I think that rigor should be brought back in because they do have a very important role to play. One of my favorite quotes is, it's self-organization within a framework, right? This isn't just go be willy-nilly and do whatever you like. It's self-organization towards a goal, towards a framework. And I think a lot of the reasons why we're having such a problem scaling Agile is because we've moved away from that a lot. We've kind of lost that overall. We're moving towards a definite goal in a definite direction. So that's definitely my personal bias is management does seem to play a bigger role than I think we emphasize a lot.
And I think that's one of the reasons why I love delivering with Andrew, because that view is often distinct and different than you find inside of the Agile world in a lot of cases. I remember years ago, at conferences, people were saying, we don't need testers anymore. Testers, they're out of the picture. We've got TDD, we've got unit testing, we've got Agile. As we've seen, that hasn't been the case. And later thought in Agile brings those testers in and those specific skill sets to work with that team in a self-organizing fashion. I think we're seeing today that same sort of move where we're reaching in and grabbing management and saying, you need to participate in this. You're an important part of that team. And my eyes were open mostly in talking with Andrew about how that plays out and how that's important. Let's talk about the course and what we're going to cover today. So on my slides, you'll see that lean product development, we'll define that in just a moment, in this module, right? The introduction, module one. When we move on, we've broken this into principles and practices. And on the left-hand side, you're going to see the principles, things like economics over emotion. Here we'll talk about the importance of having a good framework where we can make decisions, value flow over resource utilization and timelines. I'm going to let you talk a little, just a summary of what that's going to look like.
So I think this is one of the well, it's the sec- it's our second principle for a reason. I think it's the second most important principle. The how we can bring management back into this fold is shifting our management focus from the more traditional utilization, timelines, Gantt charts, that sort of thing, to reorient and manage the flow of value through our systems. Managers have a great skill set, and they have a very important skill set that translates quite well to managing value flow through a system once they just make that paradigm shift to get oriented in the right direction. I think that's the crucial piece that puts management back into our agile teams.
And the next one, system over local optimization. In here, we're going to just talk about things that actually, frankly, can be counterintuitive to teams. Like having your developers get better can actually slow down your overall delivery of software. Now, in most cases, that's not going to happen, but we'll point out cases where it does, where optimizing a small group can harm the actual delivery of value. And I think this is another key principle we need to think through. Decentralized decision making over command and control. And again, I'm going to pass this one back to you because it falls right into that management realm.
It really does. My personal background, I spent 4 years in the Marine Corps, and the Marine Corps is a great example of this, and we'll go further into this example later on. But it's the concept of how do we drive decision-making authority into the lower levels of our organization, the levels of our organization that are really on the front lines, touching customers, touching product owners. They're very close to the changes, and they can take advantage of those very quickly. How do we achieve that while maintaining that centralized alignment? So we have to be able to decentralize that authority and still maintain that overall alignment. And this is another area where the modern software manager really needs to have a big role. Decentralizing that information so that the people at lower levels of the organization can make good decisions on a day-to-day basis about the thousands of little things that we decide all the time.
I couldn't agree more. And when you look at the decision-making, we tend to think of the CEO or the CIO as making these giant decisions that impact the history of the company. And in most cases, they do make giant decisions. But the fact is that these small day-to-day decisions of the hundreds of software developers in that same org collectively have a far larger impact than any decision made at the executive level. So if the executive level is going to make change happen in an organization or try to facilitate that, they're going to have to provide guidance where they centralize some of those decisions, directions, but the actual decisions get decentralized. This is a really crucial one. It's a good topic. The next three are practices that you can put in place. Feedback loops, managing queues, and batch sizes, and making sure that we kind of optimize on those. So we're going to look at how we can get very fast feedback in feedback loops, why that's important, how to measure it. When we get to managing queues, we're going to talk about how queues tie into some pretty critical things like cycle time, like utilization. In fact, this is where we're going to talk about another counterintuitive thing. Driving up utilization, getting more out of your people, can very often result in less value being delivered to your customers. I think this is a very counterintuitive area, but as Andrew mentioned earlier, something we really do need to talk about in depth so people can understand it. Batch sizes, how big of stuff do you create? Do you have a 2-year sprint, waterfall-like, or do you do a 1-month sprint or a 2-week sprint? Or do you, a la Kanban or continuous
single
flow,
eliminate, flow.
Eliminate sprints altogether. The last section is Kanban. We're going to very briefly talk about how Kanban takes the principles and the practices, and it wraps those two together in a framework that you can use to help improve your software practice and your software delivery. And we're not going to talk in depth because 2 weeks ago we spoke a full day on Kanban and how to use Kanban to drive continuous change in an organization. And we're going to simply point you back to those recordings. They should be online very shortly. Right. That wraps us until we get to, once we finish those, we'll be wrapped. This section's not wrapped.
Wait, hold on. Okay, we're good.
Expectations. Target audience. There's a couple folks here. Anyone interested in understanding lean product development? That means delivering software in a in a nice continuous fashion where we can build chunks of value quickly. Well, we'll define it later. And not just developers and IT folks who are the target of MVA predominantly, but also looking at mid to senior level managers.
And an important caveat to that is people who either want to become mid to senior level managers or who are just really interested in pointing out to their mid and senior level managers what it is they're doing wrong on a day-to-day basis. So this will definitely help you do that.
I love that. That is so true. Very often when Andrew and I talk about this sort of thing, we get this response from people, oh my goodness, can you show this to my manager? Right. Yes, but more importantly, you can. Then this will arm you with the arguments you need to make for why things like status reporting can sometimes negatively impact a development team.
Also, an important caveat to that is it will give you not only the arguments, but the vocabulary to make those arguments in a language that your mid to senior level managers can actually understand. That's really important. And that's one of the large failings, I think, of the Agile community at large is we'll go to mid and senior level managers and we'll say things like, we need to have smaller batch sizes, reverse that. We need to have 2-week sprints instead of 4-week sprints, and your mid to senior level manager doesn't understand what a sprint is. But they have a manufacturing background, and if you start talking to them about batch sizes and which WIP limits and throughput, you're speaking to them in a language that they can understand. So this course will really help you translate a lot of the Agile principles that you might know and love to a language that someone who's not Agile centric but is interested in actually getting stuff out the door can understand and work with you through.
That is a great point. There's some suggested reading materials. I hesitate to call them prerequisites, but they are supporting materials. Don Reinertsen's Principles of Product Development Flow is one of my favorite books. I brought it. In fact, I brought 3 versions of it, 2 Kindles and a printed version. Before I had the Kindle version, I carried it with me almost wherever I went. There's so much stuff in that book.
It's my go-to book on my phone. I'm sitting on a plane or waiting for a meeting or whatever, it's the book that I pull open because it's broken down quite nicely into principles that are consumable in 5 to 10 minutes, a single principle that you can read and digest very quickly. So it's a great book for if you've got 5 minutes of free time.
Yeah, and it will blow your mind. Definitely, it's a good book. Mary and Tom Papendick, they kind of drove a lot of this lean software development ideas into the software development world. You'll see that Don Reinertsen and the Papendicks, we'll talk about this later, come at it from slightly different directions in a way, but they've started to converge as the principles really have started to rise to the surface. And of course, David J. Anderson's book, Kanban, The Successful Evolutionary Change for Your Technology Business, another good book to kind of ground you in some of the fundamentals. The Kanban book is more a little less theoretically based and more implementation based, whereas the other two happen to have a little more theoretical tint to them.
And this is definitely not to say that these are the only books in this subject. I mean, there's everything from like Gold Rats the Goal to some of the more modern ones that are based on a particular framework. All of them contribute, but we feel that these really highlight some of the core principles that underlie most of the other work in this field.
That's very true. So join the MVA community. On the next slide, really, we're talking about just what are we doing today. The Microsoft Virtual Academy, it's free online learning traditionally tailored to IT pros and developers. This session, these ALM Wednesdays, really are pulling in people from a lot of different areas, not just IT pros and developers. But as you'll see, we speak specifically to this audience as well. There's over 1 million registered users. Actually, as we walked in the door, we saw 1.7 million. I think that's due to this ALM Wednesday session. We've
right,
seen a, we've
exactly.
seen a big bump of 700,000. It's all us. But up-to-date, relevant stuff. I have to say, I was exposed to MVA for the first time by presenting a course. I was asked to present one, and I watched some, and now it's my go-to place to find free training for a lot of stuff, especially on the Microsoft technology stack. I watched the Power BI one and really loved it.
If you haven't seen the Power BI one, I highly recommend it. Power BI is an up-and-coming product from Microsoft that I'm a huge fan of. One of the teams I'm working with right now is starting to switch all of their reporting over to Power BI because it's a little plug for Power BI, but I think it's a great product. It does some pretty amazing stuff.
Yeah, and to be fair, we're going to be talking about analytics and metrics and these sorts of things. It's a tool that can expose it. But if you're interested, MVA is a place to find that. It's a place to find a lot of different content. One quick reminder, earn while you learn. You get 50 MVA points for attending this event. You go to aka.ms/MVA-voucher. And enter this code. If you can scroll down to the bottom of the, kind of the middle-ish of the screen, it's the third box over. It says enter a code. It's Lean Software, SFTW. And you're in. All right. Let's get to it. Let's introduce lean product development. And I think the first question is, what is lean product development?
So when we define lean product development, I always like to keep my definitions as simple as possible. So there'll be all kinds of crazy caveats to this and little, but the heart of the matter is, it's optimizing the flow of value through a system with inherent variability. And that last with inherent variability is crucial to recognize that we're talking about the flow of value through a system, which means that we've got handoffs from some form of handoffs. No one person is generating all the value. So we've got, you know, it's got to go from A to B to C to D in some way, shape, or form. And that system has variation or variability. We cannot possibly remove it all. We need to understand that it's an inherent part of the system. It's part of what makes the system product development and not manufacturing.
Now, this comes right to the heart of the matter when you look at some predominant members of the Scrum community have said that, well, Kanban can't work because it's trying to seek to drive variation out of the system to make sure everything fits in exactly 12.23 hours of work in each segment. Nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, we'll talk about this embracing variation. You'll need to not only tolerate it, but there's times when you're going to need to embrace it. It's a trade-off. Well, we're going to see that word coming up a lot. Why should you care?
Why should you care? So the number one thing I think is the project paradigm just doesn't fit with modern continuous deployment, right? It just doesn't. Even if you pull up the PMBOK and you read the page one of the PMBOK, gives the definition. The PMBOK, for those who don't understand that, is the project management body of knowledge. It's a very large book that tells you how to do project management. If you open it up, the first page, it's got this definition of what is a project. And it has a very clear start and very clear end dates. The software as a service revolution kind of kills that whole idea in building software, right? We build software on a continuous basis. It's an evolutionary process where we're continually adding value and trying to remove stuff that no longer adds value to our product over time. And so that project paradigm just doesn't quite fit anymore.
The next thing is this concept of inventory. We want to minimize work in process, and we'll dive into that detail more. But right now, what we're working on in a factory is totally obvious. If you have a blockage on some part of an assembly line and the rest of the assembly line doesn't stop, you got this giant pile of stuff freaking you out, telling you to slow down and stop. In software development, you may have a freaky big pile of stuff that hasn't been pushed to production, but where is it? It's tucked in a branch, it's on some hard drive somewhere. And we've got big hard drives, right? It's just the fact we threw it away and we put it in Visual Studio Online. Microsoft has giant hard drives. We never notice this inventory. And this inventory is the thing that's gonna come back and bite us.
Right.
Andrew's had some, I'm gonna bring up a couple ideas later that Andrew's had on ways to actually get that inventory out and make it visible.
I'm glad you said that there because I was about to pull it in right now, so.
Oh, go ahead and pull it in. No, pull it in.
Wait. Okay, so there's some cool things. So one of the things I always like to talk about is we use Kanban boards to make a big visual display and it visualizes a small portion of your inventory, but I don't think that really you can't make a Kanban board big enough to actually visualize your inventory in most places. Most places that we go to work with, you ask them, so if you took your backlog right now and you stopped putting in new stuff, how long would it take you to finish everything that's in your backlog? And the average answer for that is like 5 to 7 years. I mean, if you just, and that's the answer we get from people all the time. It's your 5 and 7 years before you could clear out your already queue of work. That's not putting anything new in the pot. And that's just crazy. So we've come up with some interesting ideas of things like, well, take a shoebox and use a shoebox to represent each piece of something in that queue. And in order to hand off a piece of work, you have to actually physically move that shoebox around.
Yeah.
If you couldn't get into your office because your office is so full of shoeboxes, you obviously know you have an inventory problem, right? And that's not a new problem. That problem's been there for decades. But now it's visible, and now you can see it.
So. And I really liked your idea for we were talking task decomposition, and Andrew said, well, really, if you're going to work on big things, just go to Home Depot and have your shoeboxes. But for bigger things, have a small moving box, a medium right. moving box, and the big moving box, right?
And you can only fit so many boxes in your office, right? So it's a limiting function.
Exactly. I love that idea. You'll see why it's an important idea later. When we jump into that. Focus on individual efficiency. I grabbed this because I love to talk about it. Andrew loves to talk about it.
We could both soapbox about this one for quite some time, I think.
We could. Individual efficiency. How efficient am I as a software developer, as a software tester, as a business analyst? We focus so much on the individual utilization and individual efficiency that we sacrifice sometimes the system efficiency. And if we get nothing else across, it's that running people at 100% utilization will harm your system. It will slow your software development to a crawl. And I won't soapbox now. It's just the intro slide. We will soapbox later. But more importantly, we will prove it. We'll get a whiteboard up here and we'll show you why this is the case and why you should care about lowering the utilization of your folks and increasing your throughput. We'll get there. Misunderstanding of variability. Why don't we just have everything built in 12.23 hours?
Right. Because this is product development, right? That's the crux of a lot of this stuff is that we're talking about product development here. If we could remove all variability, the only way that would happen is if somebody had built it before. But if somebody's built it before, why the heck are you building it? You know, why would you be rebuilding? So just go buy that and use that. And that modularization of software has really come to life in our industry in the last 5 to 10 years. Everything that we're doing is new product development. You are building something new. There's no way to accurately predict how long it will take because no one's ever done it before. And it's just inherent. It's just part of our day-to-day lives. And instead of constantly fighting and battling against it, we need to recognize it and also recognize that in a lot of ways, that's how we add value to our products, right? It's the understanding that we're making a bet on whether or not this 2 weeks of software development is going to pan out and actually increase subscriptions to our service. It may or may not. We're guessing. We're doing market research and we're trying to make educated guesses, but we're still guessing. And when you're playing a guessing game, failure is an inherent part of a guessing game, and that just adds to the variability of the system. So we need to understand that as we build our software, this variation, not only can we not get rid of it, in a lot of cases, it's actually actively adding value to what we're doing. So stop fighting against it, understand it, embrace it, and fold it into your software management practice.
Yeah. And we'll see that it's not important to eliminate variability, and it's not important to
maximize
variability. There's a balance, and we need to strike that balance. We talked a little bit about that in the Kanban session, talking about flow through the system, and that things will have variation, but that's okay. Management through proxies for value. I like this one. Russell Ackoff, who has just brilliant quotes, said, managers who can't measure what they want what they can measure. So managers that can't measure what they want what they can measure. Russell Ackoff, unfortunately, died before the Twitter era. He had so many absolutely perfect tweets, tweet-sized little things that could go. He's a brilliant thinker there, but it's we very often fail to understand what true value is, and we try to manage through some proxy for that true value. Utilization's one of them. Has everyone filled out their time cards? Are our developers typing fast enough? Could we send them to, you know, Mavis Beacon teaches typing, and they could, you know, learn to type even faster? Will that help them be more productive? Probably not. We need to measure not on these proxies. And again, we'll dive into some of that. So why should you care? Frankly, you see a lot of this in the industry. Yep. You've got completely utilized, everyone's busy, everyone's efficient, and everyone's working, but somehow they never seem to be able to produce what their customers need when their customers need it. We hear this all the time. We're both in the consulting world, and what happens when senior leaders talk to us, they say, it feels like when I give something small to my IT shop, it feels like they're running through molasses. It takes forever to get something out.
I don't understand. Yeah. We hear that all the time. I just don't understand why it takes so long.
Yeah, I have a high priority.
So I'm going to make everybody work more and increase our utilization because I don't understand why the value is not coming out the other end.
Exactly.
And then it comes out the other end slower. Yeah. So,
and we'll talk about that. So this happens more often than you could possibly believe. In fact, you probably live it. So where does it come from? There's a lot of different schools of thought from this lean software development. Mary and Tom Papendick, I mentioned, kind of launched this idea for the software community. Donald Reinertsen's been doing it for 30-some-odd years, but he's been doing it in product development. And Mary and Tom Papendick kind of brought that into people's mindsets in the software world. They were kind of the first people to introduce that. After that came Don Reinertsen with... I shouldn't say after that.
Right.
We discovered Don Reinertsen in the software world.
We finally realized that product development applies to software development, and we're like, wait, we can lean on this as well.
Exactly. The same theories apply. The Agile Manifesto, a critical piece that we're all familiar with. That manifesto was written in a way that embodies a lot of these lean principles. Lean and Agile tend to be some very tightly coupled. I like to simplify the distinction between the two as Agile coming from people's experience as to what has worked, and Lean coming from the proof behind why Agile works, kind of to underlie that foundation, provide the foundation for Agile. This course predominantly aligns with Lean product development. We pull a lot from Don Reinertsen, but you'll see quotes in here and things from Mary and Tom Papendick, and some other areas as well.
I would just like to quickly call out the PMBOK, the PM body of knowledge. The Agile community tends to disparage traditional project management, and unfairly in a lot of ways, I think. Someone's been traditionally delivering valuable software, right? Because we live in a world full of software. So there's pieces of value there, and I don't want to get a lot of ways we get lost, I think, in some of the rhetoric of our current movement and forget that the previous movements also brought a lot of value to the table. So I would just like to point out that the PMBOK, while the project management paradigm doesn't necessarily fit a continuous flow model, it still has value to add. And there are some gems inside there that we can pull out. A lot of that learnings we've applied to this course.
Yep. Let's take a look at how all this fits together then. This is one way of looking at it. We've got the principles, the Agile and Lean principles. Again, these very related things often flow into methodologies. These are where people have packaged up the principles in particular guidance, be that cookbook style guidance or just general guidance. Things like Scrum and XP we're very familiar with. Rational Unified Process is in there as well for even attacking. I mean, one of the first principles is attack the highest risk things first in RUP, right? And these methodologies then have flowed into this idea of enterprise agility, where we're trying to grow this, grow what we've learned and things that are working at the team level to the entire enterprise. Underlying all this are some very key practices. Several we're going to be talking about today, like WIP limits and batch sizes, but other practices that are very important, things like user stories and pair programming.
So I think I would like to also call out a lot of when we get into the methodology box, we tend to forget that underneath that methodology were some supporting principles that made that methodology work, right? Like, why do sprints work? Well, sprints work because they help us control our batch sizes and a lot of that. And basically, every piece of the methodology that works has an underlying principle that supports it and a practice that helps foster it in our environments. And I think if we can draw back from the rhetoric a little bit and understand the interaction of those three things, we can alter it much more easily to fit the needs of our particular situation. So understanding how those three things interact will help you scale it out to the enterprise level, I think. And it's very important to understand which box we're currently talking about.
And that's a fair point. And actually, a week from today, we'll be back talking again about enterprise agility in the next session, taking Kanban, taking these lean principles, and then bringing that up into the enterprise where we can improve not just the delivery of software in iterations, but deliver more value to our customers by looking at the bigger picture. We'll talk about that scaling. So today's discussion structure, as we mentioned earlier, broken from principles into practices. We've kind of grouped Kanban as a practice. It's a way to improve your software development process. Last thing to talk about is our culture flag, and you're going to see these culture flags. I told you I had a bias towards delivering or to looking at things from a mathematical and a proof standpoint. This flag brings us back to the actual change that needs to occur. Cultural change will likely accompany any process change you have. You're going to need to have trust in your people. People are going to have trust in their leadership. These things are sometimes difficult to pull out, and it becomes, as Andrew put it on this slide, a bootstrapping problem. We need to understand them both so that we can collaborate and more effectively work together.
Yeah, definitely. The interplay of culture and process change is it's vital. We've seen agile adoptions fail because they tried to dictate agile processes without understanding the cultural changes that needed to take place from senior level management all the way down in order to support that, right? Lean in a lot of ways is it's just a mindset. It's just a way of thinking about and approaching problems in a value-centric way. It's just a way of understanding how variability plays into the delivery of that value and approaching a problem in such a way to increase the flow of value through your system, right? It's not a prescribed set of, you know, rules do this and X will follow. It's such a mindset. And that mindset plays into so much more than just, you know, at what stage in my process do I do testing? Do I do drive testing earlier? Do I drive testing later, right? It plays into just the everyday interactions between the people on your team. How do they talk to each other? Do you have a culture of experimentation that allows you to celebrate failures when that failure purchased information that was more valuable than the failure? Just little things like that are so culture-centric, we don't want to lose them in the talk of the philosophy and the theory underneath of it. We don't want to lose those.
That's exactly right. Well, what do you think? Shall we get on with the sessions?
I think we should get on with a break, but I'm so excited about this one because it's like 8 hours of soapboxing, right? this is our water cooler conversations every day. So now we get to talk about it to you guys for 8 hours. So I'm super excited. I couldn't be more excited.
Same here. We're going to take a 15-minute break. That's a longer break than normal because we're going to go up here and we're going to replace this screen with a whiteboard. Some of the things we're going to want to explain and teach, we're going to do it from a whiteboard. Two reasons. One is it has more of an impact than slides do. But secondly, we want to build through that whiteboard discussion so that you can take those same ideas in front of a whiteboard with your coworkers, with your management, and walk through those same types of discussions. So we'll see you in 15 minutes.